Are you a Mainer or just a resident of Maine? And why are we even asking the question? For generations, people who are from Maine have called themselves natives and called those who moved here merely 50 years ago from away. For some newcomers, the distinction may paint them as outsiders and add fuel to local political disputes. For others, the question of who is a real Mainer and who isn't doesn't really matter in today's multicultural world. I'm Keith Shortall, and today on Maine Calling, we bring you another in our occasional What Does It Mean series by asking the question, what does it mean to be a Mainer? With me in studio is Jed Coffin, author of A Chant to Soothe Wild Elephants and the forthcoming book Rough House Friday. He's a member of the nonfiction faculty at the University of Southern Maine's Stone Coast MFA and wrote the article in this month's Maine magazine, The Norumbega Effect. He'll explain what that is in a moment. With us from our Bangor studio is Judy Hakala of the University of Maine English Department. So just what does it mean to be a Mainer? This is Maine Calling.
Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN Radio Listener Contributions and by Packard Judd Kay, providing strategic marketing consulting, communications, research, and training services online at PackardJuddKay.com.
And to join the conversation today, email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post to our Facebook page, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. So, what is a real Mainer, and why do we even ask the question? At the heart of this is a bit about how people make judgments about other people they don't know, including questions about their pedigrees. If I didn't know anything about you, Jed Coffin, welcome to the program, first of all. If I didn't know anything about you other than your name, Coffin, last name Coffin, and that you came from Brunswick, which is where you live, I would guess that you were one of the Brunswick Coffins, and I would guess that you were probably born in Brunswick or nearby and grew up there and was part of that family. Would I be right?
No. You'd be wrong, sadly. Just to tell you a little bit about my pedigree, a word that I did not discover in writing the article, but that I like your use of. I moved to Maine when I was 3 with my mother. I was actually born in Burlington, Vermont. My story is a little bit different. My parents met during the Vietnam War. The first place they came back to was Portland, Maine, where my grandfather lived. My mother had a job waitressing at Boone's Restaurant. And then for education, they moved to Vermont, to Burlington, Vermont, where I was born. My parents separated when I was 3. My mother came back to Brunswick, where my grandfather owned an apartment building, and we settled here. I don't know a lot about my Coffin heritage. I know that there are streets and schools and lobster pots out off Bailey Island where Coffin is pasted across, you know, as kind of an emblem. But I don't know that family, and I don't know who they are. There's a legend that my grandmother, when my grandfather was at Radar School at Bowdoin College before World War II, asked Robert P. Tristram Coffin, the poet at Bowdoin College, if we were related, and he took the genealogical documents and apparently never gave them back. So that's all I got.
Judy Hakala, I'm gonna judge you now. That sounds like a Finnish name to me. Growing up in the Mid-Coast, we had a lot of Finnish families, and Hakala sounds Finnish, and I saw in your resume that you went to UMaine and Colby. I might guess that you are from a Finnish family from Mid-Coast Maine. How did I do?
You did quite poorly, actually. Sorry, I don't want to start on a negative note. Hakala is my married name. My husband was a first-generation Finn-American, and not from Mid-Coast, but from Montana. And I was born in western Connecticut. My grandfather, my maternal grandfather, was a small-time dairy farmer. My roots on both sides go back to pre-Revolutionary War Connecticut. When I came to Maine, I always say I've lived in Maine as long as I've been old enough to choose where I was going to live. And I think choice has a lot to do with being a Mainer. Are you here by choice? What have you had to give up to live out that choice? Why did you make that choice? Well, my choice was there was no choice. I just felt very comfortable, very much at home here. My husband and I were both first-generation college goers from blue-collar families. His father was a coal miner. Mine worked in a brass factory. And we loved the university. We loved our first-generation college students. We loved the state. When we had opportunities to go elsewhere, we talked about where do we want to be, and the answer was right here. I've lived in the same house for 42 years, and you couldn't get me out with dynamite.
Judy, I'm guessing that some of our listeners right now are questioning the very premise of this show. Why do we need to ask the question about whether we're truly a Mainer or not a real Mainer? Or what's the value of the question? Can I ask you first?
I think the question, there's so many ways of approaching it. One is that there's this human tendency to look at us and other. And one way you define yourself is by who you aren't. And in Maine, where sometimes people feel there isn't much positive to define themselves by, they say, well, we're not from Massachusetts. That, of course, being the epitome of otherness for us. So that's, I think, a part, just a human nature part of it, an identity part. I think it's become more of a question now as the state itself becomes more diverse. Much of what we talk about when we talk about a Mainer is really limited to a pretty narrow segment of Maine population, and that is the old Yankee stock, the stock I myself come from. We ignore, and Jed, who covered quite a bit of this in his article, didn't mention the Franco-Americans, but that's a huge part of our culture. And for many, many, many years, it was a second-rate part. French students who grew up speaking French at home were punished, I mean, physically punished with rulers, with standing in the corner for speaking French in school. It was forbidden, and it took a great deal of effort for them to claim their identity as not Mainers, but Franco-Mainers. And, of course, now the state is even more diverse with the Somali population is the one that always comes up. In our part of the state, the Hispanic people who first came as migrant workers picking blueberries and apples, but who liked the place and have decided to stay. So I think the question, and of course, the summer people. That's, I think, the beginning of it. We have to define ourselves as Mainers to separate ourselves from the people who come in and think they know what we ought to be and what we ought to be doing. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I'll just go on and on if you don't push the stop button.
Feel free. We've got time.
What I talk about is who gets it. Who gets it about being a Mainer? And a lot of people do. There are two examples of people who don't get it. One I just saw this morning, in fact. It was a brief article in the latest edition of Better Homes and Gardens magazine about special things to do in the fall. And they mentioned a dark sky astronomy project in, and this is what killed me, the quaint town of Bar Harbor. Anybody who uses the word quaint to refer to anything in Maine doesn't get it.
Go ahead, Jim. Sorry. Was
an example that I saw last week. I was driving somewhere between on Route 1 between Stockton Springs and Belfast, and there's a falling down building and a couple of old trucks parked next to it, and pulled off the road into this thigh-high grass was a car with a New York license plate, and standing beside the car was a woman taking a picture of the truck. And her back is to U.S. Route 1. Her back is to nationally branded hotels. But she's going to go back home and say, oh, look, this is the real Maine. How quaint. Okay, I'll stop.
No, good stories. Jed, your article that Judy referenced,
right.
The Norumbega effect. Can you explain what that is and what the article was about?
Sure. I think I can explain what it is. Now, the Norumbega effect is Norumbega historically and culturally, during the waves of exploration that occurred in the 16th and 17th centuries in this part of the world, was the name given to given to Maine by volleys of European explorers. Norumbega was theoretically a land of milk and honey, where men and women wore earrings made of gold, and the streams were full of silver nuggets, and mystical creatures floated across the landscape. This clearly was an outright lie about Maine, but it was enough to convince more colonists to come over and check it out. What the colonists then found was what we now know as Maine, a place with beautiful summers, harsh winters, and where it's kind of hard getting by. Now, the Norumbega effect is, I think, a thing that infects us all. It brought the first waves of Europeans here as settlers, and it brings, the two guys next door to me in my neighborhood to the town of Brunswick. One of them happens to be my brother-in-law, who's from England and who spent a considerable amount of his time in Switzerland. Why would a guy like that come to Maine? In short, there's a certain giddiness about these guys. They're out in their boat every weekend exploring islands. They're sort of joyous about their life and what Maine has in opportunity. And my brother-in-law told me recently, he said, I've tried more things in the 6 months that I've lived in Maine than I ever have in my whole life growing up in England. I don't really know what that means to him, but it's big. And, as much as I admire and understand and am empathetic with Judy's assessment of how Maine and the idea of being a Mainer is based on otherness, I also think that to be a Mainer is a catch-all term for what really is a set of vague values that have a lot to do with independence, resourcefulness, stuff that I noticed greatly in my mother's way of life, who has not lived here that long, grew up in Thailand, but shoveling your driveway and figuring out how to fix things by yourself, those things are important, and I do take a somewhat more substantive approach to the meaning of Mainer.
All right, let's bring in some of our skeptical listeners, including Todd, who is in Bristol. Hi, Todd. Welcome to the program.
Hi, yes.
Go ahead, please.
I'm a masshole. grew up outside of Boston, graduated high school, and went to University of Maine, Orono. And the reason I went to University of Maine, Orono is I'd spent a fair amount of time in Maine and absolutely loved it. And I never went back. And when I went to Orono, my sister, who was living in Boston, thought I was crazy. And my parents, who were still alive at the time, were glad that I was going to a relatively inexpensive school, but they also thought I was crazy. And now my sister lives in Yarmouth, and my mother lives in Woolwich. My dad, unfortunately, passed away. But quite honestly, I find it ridiculous and derogatory that this question is even being asked. If you happen to be lucky enough to have been born in Maine, that should not somehow elevate your status of worth in this great state. And I have lots of neighbors and lots of friends that were both, fourth or fifth generation Mainers, and I have lots of neighbors and lots of friends that have just discovered this place, and I find it kind of ridiculous to think that the value of their opinion should be based on how long they or their parents or grandparents have lived here.
Let's get our guest to respond. Judy, we'll go to you first.
I absolutely agree with you. That was what I was driving at when I said that part of my thinking on what is a Mainer is who gets it about the state. And it's obvious that both your born there neighbors and your moved in neighbors and you yourself get it. You understand that there are good things about the state. A lot of Mainers and newcome Mainers do. The ones I worry about are the ones who think Maine is absolutely perfect. If only it had one more art gallery or trendy restaurant. They love this. They see the state, I think, as a blank canvas, and they're going to paint their Norumbega on it, to use Judd's reference.
Sure.
But obviously, University of Maine did a good job of training you to use your mind. Those are good thoughts.
And I think we're doing this program because some people do raise the question that they judge others based upon this pedigree that we talked about at the top. And Judd, is it your sense that maybe most of those people are natives?
Maybe, or at least false natives like myself. The caller used the words ridiculous and derogatory, and I sort of agree with that designation. On the other hand, I can't deny that the question of what is a real Mainer and whether or not you're a Mainer and the foggy criteria that goes along with those distinctions is not a relevant question. I don't like the question. I don't like knowing that growing up, I used to kind of bypass the fact that I was born in Vermont. But I don't forget that there's a certain power into the asking of that question. Whether that's a good power or a bad power doesn't really change the fact that it still exists. You know, in my neighborhood in Brunswick, which one of my friends recently told me that Maine doesn't start until you're north of Bar Harbor. You know, trust me because I come from Brunswick and I'm quote from here. That kind of trust paints a very subtle picture of what I think is a huge socioeconomic, cultural, historical issue in this state. And yes, I'd like to pretend that that question's not relevant and it's derogatory and ridiculous, but that doesn't mean it goes away.
We're going to take a short break. When we come back, your comments and questions. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment on our Facebook page, or call 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. We'll be right back.
I'm Tom Ashbrook, host of NPR's On Point. Barack Obama and the Democrats now head to Charlotte, North Carolina for their national convention. And we'll be there live in Charlotte in the heart of the action and looking beyond to the issues of the country. Join us On Point beginning September 4th from the Democratic National Convention in Charlotte.
Join us for On Point pregame show coverage at 7 o'clock each evening, just before our convention coverage from NPR. Join MPBN on Facebook, along with over 9,000 others, for notes on special programming, questions from you and for you about programming, conversations with other listeners who may or may not think the same as you do, also schedule updates, information, and news about MPBN. We invite you to become an MPBN Facebook fan and enjoy opportunities to share your feedback, get to know our on-air staff, and connect with other listeners and viewers. If you like MPBN On Air, like us on Facebook, too. Broadcast of Maine Calling is made possible by MPBN listeners and by Cool as a Moose, clothing, sunglasses, souvenirs, and gifts with locations in Portland, Freeport, Brunswick, and Bar Harbor. Details at coolasamoose.com.
And welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall today. We're talking about Mainers. Do you consider yourself a Mainer? With me in the studio, Jed Coffin. He's an author and member of the University of Southern Maine faculty. On the line with us from Bangor, the Bangor studio, is Judy Hakala, professor of English at the University of Maine. We'd like you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Email talk@mpbn.net, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. First, though, on the line with us now is Brenda Stimson. She is the great-great-granddaughter of King James McKinney of Malaga Island. Brenda, welcome to Maine Calling.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your family, if you would, and about your great-great-grandfather.
Okay. I was born, brought up in Maine, and I went to school in Brunswick, Maine. I didn't graduate from high school because things were very tough back then. We all were, for a living, we all dug clams and coal hogs and went lobstering and crabbing and all that stuff. And I really enjoy living in Maine. And I originally, like I said, came from Sebasco, and my great-grandfather... There's an island down there called Meligo Island, and my great-grandfather, he was the king of the island, and they had boats and floats come in with houses on them and things from different places, people from different places, and they made their own village out there.
I see. When you say he was king, was his title?
Yes, he was the king of Meligo Island. He was the title. He run the whole place. And they all built it. Everybody had their own special house. They all went to school out there. They had a schoolhouse. They had a church. And they all went to church every Sunday, went to school every day, the kids that was there. And my great-great-grandfather, he went to shore. Went grocery shopping. He was about the only one that went to shore to go shopping. And, of course, he'd bring the groceries back. But most of it, they lived off the island. And they caught crabs and lobsters and dug clams and quahogs and all that.
Yeah. Now, when you were growing up, and were your parents or your grandparents or others in your family, did they concern themselves with who was a native Mainer and who wasn't? Did it come up in conversation?
Well, for a long time, I guess I never talked about it much, but a few years ago, I started getting concerned because I used to see a lot of write-ups in the papers and things. So I started going to meetings and things they had, and so I learned a lot about it that way.
Yeah, what sorts of meetings were they?
It was a get-together
uh-huh.
and learn more about Meligo Island.
Oh, I see, right.
And they had things from the different houses out there, and like they had something special from King James's house, and they had something special from my mother had a stepbrother that came from there, and they had stuff from his house. And
right, a lot of history and history
yes,
buffs interested
a lot
in the
of history to learn.
Sure, sure.
Jed Coffin, he went to one of the meetings with me.
Who is that now?
Jed,
yeah.
Yeah, he went to one of the meetings with me. He seemed to enjoy it very much, him and his girlfriend.
Well, good. I guess we brought you into the show because, you know, we were curious. You're clearly someone who has multiple generations who are from Maine. Do you see yourself as different from other folks who might have moved here a few years ago?
Not really. I might be.
You're very political about it.
But I do love Maine. I wouldn't want to live anywhere else.
Sure. Well, great. We'll stay on the line here with us. We appreciate you joining us today. Let's also go now to Cherryfield and Pete. Hi, Pete. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hey. Thank you for having me on.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. First of all, this From Away stuff, it's the same over in New Hampshire and Vermont. It's a real provincial attitude that you'll find other places. And I personally think it's really cute. I am from New Hampshire, not from Maine. And but over the years, I've told a lot of stories about people from Away that I think are cute. I think they're part of the folklore. And I think that people who are, who worry about this and get upset about it and think it's derogatory are way over the, way over the edge.
So you're saying this sort of thing happened in New Hampshire as well, these debates about who was
who was from Away.
Yeah.
You were a flatlander. If you didn't grow up in Vermont or New Hampshire, you were a flatlander, usually from Massachusetts.
Right.
But several years ago, I collect sort of stories and whatever. Several years ago, I had an obituary, an actual obituary from the Bangor Daily News that read, although Mr. Collins, who was 89, was a lifelong resident of Brewer, he was born on the boat coming over from his native England. And I thought that was the epitome of From Away.
Right. That's an asterisk there, even in the obit there, right?
All right. Anyway, I think people overdo this a lot, but I find it very interesting. I've heard politicians and other people that have come here to make speeches, and they always seem to the need to find a main connection in their introduction.
Right. All right. Pete, thanks for calling. Let's go to South Berwick and Nanette. Hi, Nanette. Yes. Nanette, are you with us? Okay. I think we have lost Nanette, or we'll give her a second chance to join us. Judy, the previous caller was talking about how this happens in other states, but do people in Connecticut, for example, debate about who's really from Connecticut?
Remember debates growing up there. I do not remember that. And we certainly had outsiders called New Yorkers. Many of them, they invaded us every weekend, or they would stake out claims in Fairfield County and commute and call themselves Connecticutites. But we all knew the truth. I think the sense of identity, and sometimes it can be linked to a sense of inferiority. Certainly, outsiders have looked down on rural Mainers often as people to take advantage of, people to come and buy their old furniture and sell it at three times the price as antiques, the buying up of coastal land. I think that sense of we matter, we make a difference, some of it has to do with that sense of being looked down on, as people in many rural states do. I think it's important, and the caller who was born in New Hampshire, I think, hits on something there. Maine is like rural states everywhere, I think. The humor, I do in my Maine literature course, do a lot on Maine humor. And students will say, oh, I heard the same thing about West Virginia. It's like that. How many people does it take to change a light bulb? There's a certain kind of humor that fits situations that are not strictly Maine. But that sense of identity is, I think, in some people is almost a defensive action, that we may not have money, we may not be highly educated, our economy may be tanking, but by God, we're Mainers.
There's also, I'm wondering, there's a sort of us and them rivalry. I'm reminded of my grandfather, who was originally on my mother's side from Norway, the country, not the town, and, mm-hmm. Who would often recite this little ditty, a thousand Swedes ran through the weeds chased by one Norwegian. So there was always a rivalry between the Norwegians and the Swedes. Let's go to Gabriel in Portland. Hi, Gabriel. Gabriel, are you there?
Yes.
Go ahead, please. Yeah, welcome to the program.
I just had a comment, really, about sort of the premise. I do think it's interesting asking the question. I think everybody does ask the question or make the comparison, but I didn't really hear any references to Native Americans in Maine, and even I'm Passamaquoddy from Washington County, and even today I feel like politically, at least, the tribes in Maine are viewed as sort of second-class citizens or sort of wards of the state in many contexts. I was wondering if your guests on the show had any comments towards that, and I can take the answer off the air.
Okay. Jed, aren't we truthfully all just visitors here?
Sure. Gabriel, you know, I'm really glad that you brought that up. That's a part of my article that I think it's in paragraph 5, if you get a chance to check out the Maine Magazine article, that I do address. And, you know, I'm going to answer that question personally rather than intellectually or academically. I mean, I hear you loud and clear, and I know that one of the struggles for me as a, I'm not even sure what I call myself now, a biracial Mainer or something, is that, you know, growing up in this state in earnest, good-natured Maine studies courses, we're given a certain story about how Maine came into being. And that story never really seemed to include or begin with Native Americans and the fact that they were called Native Americans. And we had a very vague sense of culturally what that beginning really was, to me is a problem. Also, the further forward I go, and I have a 4-year-old daughter, Jayen, and who I gave an explicitly Thai name to so she wouldn't forget that, you know, her father carried a different story. I feel obliged as a writer and an artist in this state to kind of both deconstruct the story of what it means to be a Mainer, as contrary to, you know, lobstermen and, you know, what I think of as the old Yankee narrative, and to really take control of where it begins and who it includes now. So, you know, I don't think I've really addressed what you're getting at, but it's big. And it's in many ways, I think, without coming clean with ourselves historically, we don't really get anywhere as a culture and as a statewide, you know, people.
We have an email here. Being a Mainer means that you have a cultural identity tied into the place where you were born and grew up. You respect the resources of the state and respect the hardships that your family and past generations of Mainers had to deal with as they moved to and built the state. It's almost like a settler's claim.
Sure. Sure. Yeah, that's a great notion, I think, for a lot of people. But in, you know, in the article that came out this month, I looked at a book called New Mainers, published by Tilbury House Press, with an introduction by one of my dear friends, Reza Jalali. If you read one of the 30 stories of a New Mainer, and these are people who've fled refugee camps and civil wars and genocide, you know, to what degree are they not beholden to the same things that we are, or someone like the person who sent that email is, because, you know, their grandfather had to work through a potato harvest. You know, I mean, congratulations to that man, but my heart goes out to the woman who fled, a genocide in the Sudan.
We're going to take another short break. When we return, more of your comments and questions. Please stay with us.
Next time on the TED Radio Hour, transforming Africa in the 21st century.
Africa has immense opportunities that never navigate through the web of despair and helplessness that the Western media largely presents to its audience.
We'll hear some big ideas emerging all across Africa next time on the TED Radio Hour from NPR.
You can tune in for that TED Radio Hour this afternoon at 1 o'clock, immediately following Maine Calling.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, our What Does It Mean series continues with What Does It Mean to Be a Mainer? With me in the studio, Jed Coffin. He's author and member of the University of Southern Maine faculty. And on the line with us from our Bangor studio is Judy Hakala, professor of English at the University of Maine. Join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Email talk at mpbn.net. Post to our Facebook page or tweet at Maine Calling. Let's go now to Portland and Raymond. Hi, Raymond. Welcome to Maine Calling.
Good afternoon. Hi. I just have a couple comments. I'm a second generation Mainer, born and raised here. And street sweepers going by. just two comments. I went to schools here. Went to the normal school down in Machias and spent the last 30 years away. Different careers took me to different parts of our country. And I've noticed that there seems to be a myth about coming from Maine. Whether I was in the fishing grounds in Alaska or in the deserts of Tucson, down in the bayou of Louisiana, or even in California, I'd fill out my application and, you know, not having any family to lean on, the comment I'd always hear would be, oh, so you're from Maine. Yes, I am, born and raised there. Well, I found that opened doors to me that did not exist. And it took having to get the perspective of being away from my home state to realize just how magical, how mythical, how special this place really is. And the second comment I'd like to put forth is, a few years ago I was in New York at an art museum, and they had a summer show featuring the work of Maine artists. Folks like Rockwell Kent, the Wyeths, of course, Frederick Edwin Church, and so on. They seemed to make the state to be a yearned-for place, very remote, you know, in her time and beauty, you know, and the subject matter of the state, these unattainable ideal myth, if you will, kind of like Maine as America's Eden. Hmm. And that really didn't drive the... Now I'm 60-some-odd, returned home to retire here, and just realized what a gem that we really have.
Raymond, thanks for calling in today. Any comments, guests?
Yeah, well, I was, you know, Keith, we were just talking about, there's a phrase that I heard that has kind of haunted me for the last several months since Christmas. I had to go to New York for a Christmas party at my publisher's in Rockefeller Center in Manhattan. This is for the Penguin Group. And I met my publicist, and my editor said, you know, this is Jed Coffin. He's our new writer. He came here all the way from Maine, and, you know, this was a Christmas party, so everyone was feeling kind of groovy. And the woman looked at me with these really soft eyes and she said, oh, Maine, that's my soul home. And I haven't forgotten that term, soul home. It's kind of kitschy, but it's a strange thing to think of yourself or myself or ourselves as the inhabitants of everyone else's soul home. You know, what do we do with that? I think ideally we make a little money off it. But spiritually, how do we orient ourselves to the mundane realities of our life when we're in fact the possessors of someone else's soul home?
And have you ever tried to shovel the sidewalk of your soul home in January?
Yeah.
Can hurt your soul back.
Yeah, right.
Let's go to Bangor and Randy. Hi, Randy.
Hello.
Go ahead.
I applaud the question. I think it's a really viable and game question to put out there, and I really appreciate the comments of your guests. I wanted to suggest, however, a shadow side to this question, which is that apart from loving Maine and apart from what a beautiful place it is to be and to live, I would suggest that down on the level of the workplace, the mills, the shops, all across the state, when nativity is considered a credential, that this hurts us as a state because we often pass quality by in favor of nativity, and that the bar sort of remains lower than it might be if it weren't for that fact.
So, Randy, are you saying that hiring is that there is discrimination in hiring for so quote unquote natives?
I was going to try not to use that word discrimination, but I'm afraid that that is true for anyone who really knows Maine down at that level, that goes on every day.
I think you're right. They're part of the Maine myth is the hardworking Mainer, the Mainer who will give you more than the 8 hours or 40 hours it's almost always a he. Is obliged to, and that sometimes that one, I'm not sure it's is true. If it ever was true, I don't think it's quite as true as it was today. We're finding other ways of implementing an economy having to do with drugs, unfortunately. But also, I think I know what you're saying. I know what you're driving at. That being from away, regardless of your credentials, regardless of your abilities, almost makes it that much harder for someone to get a job if they're competing against quote-unquote natives because of that work ethic and that sense of loyalty.
Randy, have you experienced that firsthand?
Probably not. I would say that I've experienced it more through observation and through other family members. And I might just say it a little bit differently, that it's a circling of the wagons. It goes back to an us and them motif once again. And in that sense, I had the opportunity to live for many years in the South. Maine is the other South in that regard. It actually has a number of elements in common with the South.
I agree with you because it has to do, I think, with a sense of place. Mainers have a really strong sense of place, and of course Southerners do too. And when you have that sense, you want to protect it and preserve it. And that can make you suspicious of anything that seems to be coming from outsiders or different.
Yeah. Randy, thanks for the call. Let's go to Brunswick now and to Scott. Hi, Scott.
Good afternoon. I just wanted to make a couple of comments. One, I am a Maine native in all senses of the word, many, many generations of Yankee, but also half French Canadian. So I've got both of those. But the more important thing is that I think it's an option to be able to generate a story, the story of different people, because one of the things that I found that Mainers agree with is that they agree with, they don't want missionaries, but they will accept refugees graciously. And I think that's really the important point.
That's a cool observation. That is really neat.
I just want to be clear that I can understand it. What do you mean when you say missionaries?
Well, people that come to Maine and then decide that they need the new road built because their house has a bumpy road, or you know, there are countless examples of that. The people from away who want to change Maine because they want to improve it, quote unquote.
How much does money have to do with this, Scott? Does it matter if you're a wealthy person moving here or someone without means moving here? Does that matter?
I believe it matters in how you use your money and how you how you want it, let us say. Coming to Maine and showing off your money isn't going to generate a lot of sympathy, I believe. Coming to Maine and buying a piece of coastal property and then donating it will win, you know, big awards, I think, with a lot of Mainers.
Yeah. Missionaries versus refugees, Judy, you like that distinction?
Yes, I do. And the attitude toward them. The missionaries come in knowing what's good for you. And most Mainers resent that attitude. Refugees generally come in and saying, oh, my gosh, we're so lucky to be here. And Mainers appreciate that, too.
We've got about a minute.
I just think that's a cool distinction.
Yeah, sorry. We've got about a minute left. Let's go to Steve in Portland. Hi, Steve. Real quickly, please.
Sure, quickly. Unfortunately, I think the whole conversation is divisive because it, just as it's flowed, it's shown that, you know, it's gone from one to another. Then suddenly here we have a native Mena. And, do they have a better idea? I find it appalling that someone would say, gee, they want to change something, and so they're not a Mena. And yet, you know, someone who owns an art gallery, who thinks another art gallery is would be wonderful, is just as much a native, or just as much a Mena, rather, I'm sorry, as anyone else in the conversation. It's a diverse population, and people need to not be divisive and look how to change that and say who's real and include everyone.
Now, Steve, you're living in Portland.
Calling from Portland.
Calling from Portland. Have you had experience in other parts of Maine, or mostly around Portland?
My family founded parts of Maine, yet I was born in Michigan. You know, does that make me a Mainer? I've had experiences in all over Maine and all over the country and parts of the world. Anytime you go someplace, the local people very often say, you know, gee, we're the real people because we were here when? One generation ago, two generation ago, 2 days ago? Yeah. It's a divisive conversation.
And Steve, you have the last word. Quick comments from our guests.
Thanks for having me, Keith. It's been great. Devices as I hoped it would be.
Yeah, Judy?
great fun. I teach a Maine Lit course, and I've got all kinds of new material now.
All right. Well, thank you both for joining us today. Jed Coffin, a professor on the USM faculty, and Judy Hackel, a professor of English at the University of Maine. You're at Stone Coast, actually, right, Jed, to be more clear about that. Today's program produced by Jonathan Smith. Our volunteer Scott McAuliffe answered your calls. John Keimel ran the board. We had help from Rich Tozier and our Bangor studio and from the MPBN web team. Tomorrow on the program, we begin our Your Vote 2012 candidate interviews with independent candidate for Senate Steve Woods. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.